Hello everyone and welcome on the public space. Today we have our Patreon just opened 30 minutes ago, so check it out in the description if you want to support the continued success of this show. The support that you guys have been sending through Super Chat is just amazing. I'm now turning to full-time YouTubing thanks to you guys, and why not help through Patreon? It's a good way without much money taken by the agents who are involved in this, so it's the best way to support in the long term. Thank you all for your support. And today, there's such a list of amazing things that are happening. First, we will talk with Ryan Dawson and Nick Fuentes. These two thinkers have been awesome in their own way, and they've developed ways of thinking that are not comparable to the mass of either the alt-right or even centrist on YouTubers. These are two great independent thinkers, and we will be talking about probably race, probably religion also, and maybe a little bit of friendly talking about Israel at the end. Ryan, how are you doing today?
Well, I hope by friendly talking about Israel, you mean friendly smacking Israel around. And congratulations on your full-time YouTube. It is important to have Patreon, because at any point YouTube can show your account, erase everything, give you strikes, and get rid of your ability to monetize. That's been my case for over a decade. So have that Patreon as backup.
Yeah, and I'm Ryan's links are in the description to go support our two speakers today. It's going to be an awesome discussion. Nick, how are you doing today?
Doing well. How are you doing, JF? I've been watching your show. It's been doing very well. A little competitive between me and you, but that's all right. It's good content. But how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing excellent. All right, so let's get this started. This whole story started between you and Ryan, exchanging a little bit of banter on the internet. And it built up into a discussion in private in DM where themes like races, religions have come. And it's not even clear to me what will be the main theme, and you guys bring it wherever you want. However, it seems to me, having talked to you two and having exchanged a lot with you two, that there is a fundamental disagreement about race. Maybe the existence or the scientific reach of the concept of race, as well as the link between race and IQ, and the use of race as an identifier in politics. So starting with Nick, could you just lay out your thoughts so that we know whether you two agree on this question?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I watched Ryan and I watched him challenge Halsey on Blood Sports on Andy Worski. And, you know, he gave his thoughts about Israel, and I got a certain idea about him in my head, which I think a lot of people did. But then I watched his debate with Halsey, and it was pretty good. I mean, in terms of the content about Israel, and I will say, to his credit, Ryan Dawson is probably one of the best experts on the subject of Israeli influence, and he's been doing it for a long time. But I think myself and a lot of people like myself saw towards the end, there was kind of this, I don't want to say it was a disappointment, but there was something unexpected that I think Ryan Dawson said that there was race and nation and some of these more biological components were not as big of a determinant in a nation's success as a lot of people feel. And, you know, when me and Richard Spencer talked about it last week, I think it was last Wednesday, we talked about how the fact that we were nationalists. I'm a nationalist in the sense that I see that part of a nation intrinsically and part of the definition of the word nation is a racial and a biological component. And I heard Ryan say something to the effect that a reason why a continent like Africa doesn't fare so well, or sub-Saharan countries in Africa don't fare so well, is more owing to economic systems as opposed to the fact that in many cases, you look at some of the countries and the average IQ is something like 65, or it's lower than 70. And I look at something like that, I hear a statement like that, and I say, well, you know, here's somebody who seems to be like a woke liberal, maybe on Israel. And I don't even say that as a pejorative, I say that descriptively, but maybe doesn't understand so much the importance of biology and of race. And that's always been my position, that, you know, race is real, race is important. You know, certainly I don't judge people in a day-to-day basis based on it, but I think as a civilization, as a political person, you have to look at it realistically. And so that's basically my position on that question.
All right, then, Ryan.
Yeah, can I just ask what you assume my position on race is?
Well, I didn't assume. I mean, I watched your debate with Halsey, and you said it was less important than economic systems. You said that Israel being like ethno-nationalist or ethnocentric was problematic. And so I don't know, is that a mischaracterization, or what would you say your views are?
Well, Israel, like, I live in an ethno-state, but the difference between Japan and Israel is Israel's ethno-state is based on violence and Japan's isn't. Israel is the original migrant crisis because you have a bunch of Polish and European Jews moving down the Palestine and displacing the native population. And so that's very different than South Korea or Japan or something like that. As far as some people, I feel they take one extreme or the other, because it used to be the case where you couldn't attribute anything to biology because it was so, it's all, oh, it's just a social construct and blah, 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 blah. By the way, I'm not a liberal. But I think as a reaction to that, people went too far the other direction. They want to put everything on biology or too much on biology. And I'm trying to balance that out, saying, yes, race is real. Of course, IQ matters. I mean, if you're a double-digit IQer on average anyway, then on average, you're not going to succeed as well. But also what happens is when you're a little bit below your neighbors have the ability to greatly increase that gap through other means with economics and so on. And so I was just taking the other side of those systems because it's a voice that is seldom heard. Just saying it's DNA doesn't really explain very much. And I would like to talk about the policies and things because those are things we can actually fix. You can't really do much, you know, not quickly about biology, but you can change your policy.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that's fair. I think you're right. And I think maybe there's some common ground on that there is a little bit too much of an importance or an emphasis on race, at least in the alt-right. I think that's where I distinguish myself a lot from them as well. I wouldn't say that race is ever irrelevant or arbitrary, but I do agree with you. You know, you look at a country like China, for example, a high IQ country like China that for a long time didn't fare so well. And it was because they did not have efficient means of organizing capital. They did not have advanced technology. They didn't have open trade. So I agree it's not everything, but I do think it's a big part of it. And back to the question of you being a liberal, you know, here's where I say you're a liberal. Okay. I say that not to be like a boomer and like, you know, shut up, liberal. I don't mean it like that, but, you know, you seem to have a problem with this violence. You say that, well, Israel is created through violence and that's a big problem. And, you know, I kind of get where you're coming from, but I look at a country like America. We drove out the Native Americans from their land. And I don't see that as a problem. I don't see that as an immoral thing. I think conquest is a part of history. You could say it's anachronistic, maybe in modern times, you know, very recently modern times. But I think that's where I call you that because of these kinds of these moral prognostications about, well, this was violent and this was not. I think violence is kind of just a part of history.
I don't think opposing genocide is a liberal or conservative thing. It's a sane versus insane thing. Mm-hmm. And you can have a conquest or you can have expansion without murdering everyone. You can live together, which is what we ended up doing after the 1890s anyway. I think all the bloodshed and war, I mean, most of it was from disease, which you can't help, things like the spread of smallpox. But, you know, I don't think putting natives on reservations was a good thing. And I think it was definitely avoidable. And we could still have the United States without murdering the indigenous population.
Yeah. See, I think that was, you know, again, I tend to look at history where I define conservatism. I define it as kind of this understanding that history and people and society is a messy business in terms of, I almost look at Hayek, where many people would say that Hayek was a libertarian or a liberal, but he described this in terms of constructivism or constructionism versus what he called spontaneous order. And I think kind of the liberal mistake is this idea that we can have it the way we want. We could have America the way we want, but not so messy, not killing indigenous people, not putting them on reservations, not bloodshed. We could have it the way we want without it getting messy, without it getting ugly. And I think that's where you really have to draw the line between someone who's a realist, somebody who's a pragmatist, and fundamentally a conservative, not in the sense of like neoliberal free markets, wars for Israel, but in the sense of like a Bismarck, a Metternich, somebody who says, we're going to forge our history through blood and iron, that kind of thinking, as opposed to, well, killing people and genocide is evil. And I'm not saying I'm pro-genocide. I'm just saying I tend to look at things a little bit less through a moralist lens and more through a pragmatic lens. I think that's where I define it.
So would you say the migrant crisis in Europe, displacing them and having cultural suicide, is fine because that's just part of history? No. Like Mike makes right?
No, of course not. But I would say that if Europe,
they do it, but okay when we do it, like
no, I would say that if Europe responded to that, I would say that that would be a part of history. You know, I mean, like look at the reconquest of Spain, and then look at the Inquisitions. I mean, look at the Crusades against the Holy yeah. Lands. I think that's all part of history. And to your point, though, when you say that Muslims are pouring into Europe, I would say that's bad, but only because they're interfering in the interests of Europe. But I wouldn't say that because people are conquering land, like that makes them morally bad people. Like I look at immigrants coming into America and I say, it's our fault for letting them in. It's Europe's fault for letting this happen. And these people are invading. I mean, that's their will to power. They're projecting, I think, their natural interest. What's immoral about that?
I was asking if you think it's immoral. I don't like the migrant crisis because it doesn't work for either side. You have, when you import the third world, you don't bring them up. You just bring yourself down. It's not in the interest of the migrants, and it's not in the interest of those taking the migrants in because they're going to have a collapse. You can't have social welfare and open borders at the same time. That's been proven over and over again. But I would definitely have to disagree. Like, I know you're not advocating genocide, but I wouldn't just brush that under the rug and just say, well, necessary evil. I definitely disagree. You can have an expansion without slaughtering 90 million people.
Well, I mean, that's just it. Ideally, you wouldn't have it that way. But, you know, sometimes things happen. And I think part of being conservative is saying, again, that's just how things are, unfortunately. And back to the point about the migrant crisis, you know, I speak out about it all the time on my show, how it's a terrible thing and it doesn't work for anybody. But you look at people from sub-Saharan Africa who are, you know, they're making their way up through Africa and they go like, what, 10 miles off the shore of the Maghreb, and they're picked up by the Europeans and brought all the way across to Europe. I mean, at the end of the day, is life better for an African in Nigeria or is it better in Italy? I mean, that's in their interest to be in Italy where they could get free stuff, or be in Germany or Sweden where they could get free stuff. They could rape the women. They don't even face consequences most of the time. And you know, so I would just say from a political standpoint, I wouldn't say like these are bad people pursuing their interests. I would say it's bad that we elect leaders that allow this to happen. They're responsible. They're culpable.
In the long run, it's not good for them. It's probably better for somebody to stay in Nigeria. It would definitely be better to leave, say, Sudan or some shithole like that. We also have to look at a lot of the policies that help sustain the shitholeness of these nations, the predatory loans from the IMF, the World Bank, et cetera. There are a lot of policy changes that we could do to curb the immigration crisis. Because if from talking real politics, like obviously, why don't you just close your borders and stop putting sugar on the floor? Well, obviously, the European states, Merkel, et cetera, aren't interesting in doing that. But as Americans, are there things that we can do with our international banking, lending institutions, and things, policies that we could change that would also help Europe out? And the answer is yes. But they always focus on the most obvious, like, we'll just shut the border. All right, well, they're not doing that. So you have to have some other strategies to get that done if you want.
Yeah, I don't disagree about how we would fix it. But the original point is, I say you're a liberal because of this moralist kind of lens for international affairs and for history. I mean, that was really the only contention there. I agree with you. Like, if we were trying to say, how could we solve the crisis with migration in terms of America, I think you're right. I think there's we could flex our might with the supranational institutions and find a way. But just in terms of how do we frame that, and specifically the Israel issue, I don't have a problem with Israel because they established their nation and in the Middle East. That's caused a lot of problems for us. My problem with them is that we give them this money. They hold our country hostage with their lobbying and with their infiltrators, these dual citizens in our government. My problem is that they've become a parasitic. They've forged a parasitic relationship with us. And if they were just doing this by themselves, the most I would say is like, I don't really agree with that, or that's not really great. But they're pursuing their own self-interest. They're doing Israel first in Israel. And by all means, as long as we're putting America first here.
Yeah, I think it's going against their interests. They might not realize it like that, but I think they cause more anti-Semitism than any other action. And for me, it goes way beyond that, because there wouldn't be wars in the Middle East. You'll probably agree with this too, but there wouldn't be all these wars in the Middle East. We wouldn't have invaded Iraq. There wouldn't have been an invasion of Libya. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have a proxy war or fighting and funding ISIS if not for the Israelis. So it's beyond just our foreign aid to Israel. It's Israel's grip on the American system that has cost us trillions of dollars and thousands of lives. And these wars are contributing to the migrant crisis because everyone calls them, right? They don't call them migrants. They call them, what do they call them? They call them refugees, right? And maybe there's 400,000 Syrian refugees. The rest, they're not from Syria. They're from whatever, but they're all using this war refugee pretext when they're actually economic refugees. Or, well, there's a spectrum of them. And a lot of them, and for Germany, I talked to a German citizen yesterday. It's other European states going into Germany, but same difference. It's a different culture, different language, and it's sacking the system and sucking off the government tit. But this all goes back to Israel, because if we weren't in Syria, if we hadn't disabled Iraq, if we weren't threatening Iran, had we not opened the cork on Africa because Gaddafi used to keep them from coming, then we wouldn't be in this situation. But people don't trace it back to Israel. They act like everything happened yesterday. Like, oh, there's just a war in Syria just cause, and they have no idea. Maybe oil or some retarded leftist trope like that. But it goes back to the Zionist state, which goes back to their philosophy of their, you know, self-proclaimed chosen race of God having to have this so-called promised land that they had not been in, even according to mythology, for 3,000 years.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I agree, and I talk about it on my show, how you could trace everything in the middle, most of it, almost all of the roads in the Middle East lead back to Jerusalem. You know, the road to Tehran, the road to Damascus, it all goes back. So don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to evade. I'm just saying on grounds for why I have a problem with Israel and your debate with Halsey. And now you said, well, I have a problem with Israel as an ethnically centric country because unlike Japan, they established their nation through force and they drove people from their lands. And I would say that's a bad thing. And I like to point that out because I think people are hypocritical and they say the reason we support Israel is because they're a shining beacon of, you know, liberalism and humanitarianism and all this. And it's like these people invented terrorism. These people, you know, they created all these catastrophes. But I don't have a problem with that in and of itself. I don't have a problem with people driving people out in and like, you know, people talk about national
sovereignty.
You
have a problem with the consequences of it. You see, like, yeah. You may not have a problem with that, but the thing is their ethnic cleansing is what led to the formation of Hezbollah, which led to the, you know, the access with Iran and Syria, which is why we go to war with Iraq and then Syria and Libya and so on. So as a result of their ethnic cleansing, we have all these other policies that create all these wars, which deplete the treasury, which creates a migrant crisis and so on. I'm saying not only from a moral standpoint, but if you don't want all this happening in Europe and you don't want all these people, Americans and stuff to die and all this money to be spent, then you don't have ethnic cleansing and none of this begins.
Well, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I'm saying I have a problem with it from a consequentialist lens. I have a problem with it from the sense that Israel was established, and really the reason why the Middle East is so unstable and why we're in this present quagmire is because we have really yet to reconcile how we fit this country into the Middle Eastern order. I mean, can you agree that you look at the excursions we've gone on there, you look at the situation between the Americans and the Arabs, and just about a lot of it has been, how do we integrate this expansionist, imperialist country that is foreign and that is Jewish? How do we incorporate that into the order? And I'm saying, yeah, that's a big problem. And that's why I oppose it. That's why I oppose it exclusively for that reason, but not because like I have an intrinsic problem with like conquest, because I really don't. I have a problem with it because I guess to an extent it, in the modern day, it creates moral hazard. Like we have a pretty good system going, like the Westphalian system, where we respect each other's borders, we have national sovereignty and all that. But I would never say like, because, and here's what I go back to. If you say Israel is bad, because they established Israel through conquest, then you would have to say, well, America's bad because America established themselves through conquest. We took the Louisiana Purchase was, we had to conquer it from the Native Americans. We bought it from the French, but really we had to conquer it. We conquered the Mexican cession lands in the Mexican-American War. We conquered, Oregon and Washington through the war with, I think it was the British. And so maybe I'm a little rusty on my history, but even Russia was established through conquest when they paved all the way west through to Alaska. China mm-hmm. was established through conquest. All these countries, and I don't think there's a problem with that. The problem is that Israel has created these problems, but not intrinsically because of the conquest.
This discussion reminds me of you and I, Nick, talking about Syria, and it's a fascinating aspect of your interpretation of politics, because you are a moral realist. You believe that there is such a thing as good and bad, and I'm not a moral realist yet, I believe that there are things that are good and bad in the way humans interact with each other, because precisely because humans are agents who are capable of being pissed off at some group. And once you realize this, your pragmatic view can turn into something that looks almost like a moral realist view. It seems that this is the position that Ryan is adopting here. He's saying, don't be just pragmatic. Don't be just saying, because something happened, it's okay. Because the agents that you are repressing, the populations that you're oppressing, they are pissed off at some point, and they can have a legitimate revolt.
It has blowback, and one thing, the Mexican War was one in that list that I would disagree with, because the Mexican War, northern Mexico was seceding from southern Mexico, and so that was a war for their independence, and so it wasn't a conquest. They decided to join the United States. The Comanche and Mexicans fought other Mexicans because of regional scapegoating, a lot like the American Civil War. But I say we're supposed to learn from history. You can say, yeah, well, that happened. Well, we could conquest, or we can expand across land, as we have done also. Either you can buy land, you can live there with people, you don't have to murder everyone. And maybe as an atheist, I have the morality to say, yeah, genocide is bad, and mass murder and rape and theft and wars, not a good thing. And you could say, well, it happened. They're like, yeah. And is America bad? Well, that was bad. Yeah, that was bad. That doesn't mean we're going to give the land back or anything like that. I don't want to destroy Israel. I don't think it's unrealistic to say, well, just give all the land back to Palestine, move back to Europe. They've put a lot of labor and time into building their cities in Israel, and they're there. But just get rid of the settlements and lift the blockade and stop, you know, stop ethnically cleansing your neighbors. I mean, that is a very like simple thing. I would think like Christian just war theory would agree with that too. Like you don't wage war for those reasons. And, you know, I don't think that style of racism where you think put yourself above all others and the rest are just goyim and animals and we're the chosenites. So therefore, I can just go into your private property, bulldoze it down and shoot your kids. I find that to be insane.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just think that and it's a good point that you make, JF, because it is kind of funny how the two atheists on the stream are advocating a much more moralistic kind of a doctrine for foreign affairs. And I'm obviously Catholic. I happen to think, and maybe this is against Catholic doctrine, I'm probably going to get a big talking to by the Catholic Twitter after this, but I just happen to think, and I always have in terms of politics, that diplomacy and statecraft is largely immune from political moral considerations. And only because I've always looked at it from the sense that the state is a corporate entity. And I don't think corporate entities can make moral decisions. Only individuals act. I think only individuals can be held accountable for moral decisions. And so if you're a government, how could you say that like an institution should be held accountable for a moral wrongdoing? Like America was morally wrong for this. I think you could say that there were immoral decision makers or there was an immoral person on the battlefield. But by and large, when I look at conquest, and certainly, you know, you look at the Jewish people in the Middle East, and there's this conflict with the Muslims. They were obviously not welcoming to the Jews, and the Jews didn't like the Muslims, so it kind of went both ways. I see this as there are two competing interests. You resolve this through war. You resolve this through conquest. And the Jews said, you know, in order to establish this homeland, in order to be safe, we're just going to have to cleanse the Holy Land. I understand it from their point of view, and I wouldn't say that just on the basis of that am I opposed to Israel. Because by the same token, you can look at many countries like this. You could look at many countries that have established themselves through conquest, and I don't think you would say, you know, well, they should stop doing this or stop doing that, or we oppose them for that reason. You know, you'll have a lot of people who would maybe agree with these kind of moralistic judgments about Israel. They'll say, well, you know, they'll agree with you, and they'll say, well, Israel killed these people, and Israel did this, and that's why we oppose them. But then they turn around and they support a country like Russia. Or Russia, the only reason that they are as large as they are is because they were conquering what was like 500 square miles a day for 400 years, conquering it from indigenous Siberians and Tatars and all these other peoples. And that could be said for just about every country. I mean, how do you forge the modern nation state without some degree of conquest? And so, you know, again, to clarify, this is not in support of Israel. It's just to say my issue with Israel is on a different grounds than yours is, or maybe only one of the grounds that yours is.
Yeah, it's the same grounds as mine, and then I add some because I do have a moral compass, and I do think that murdering kids is bad.
I think it's bad.
If you want to look at the state from a corporate, say, well, a corporation doesn't have any sort of moral sense. They just do things based on, I don't know, business incentives or whatever. Other corporations are made of people, and they do make moral decisions now, and we don't poison the rivers and things. But we decided, even as an international body with the United Nations, to create the Geneva Conventions. And most foremost of those, excuse me, was that we're not going to annex land, because we saw in World War One what happened when lots of land was taken from Germany, which was wrong. I mean, that remember who started World War One? The winning side started World War One, and they annexed all this territory. So you had Danzig, which was separate from the rest of Germany. Some went to Poland, some went to France. And what did it lead to? It led to another world war, because obviously the people who were getting screwed in that deal didn't like the Treaty of Versailles, and we all know what happened later. They got their land back, and then they got it divided between East and West Germany. So it's just this cascade of bad events when you have that mindset of, well, we're just not going to look at morals. We're just going to look at a business decision. It ends up being bad business, too. So what they decided was, all right, we're not going to allow the annexation of land. Even if you win the war, you don't gain any territory. And that has been abided by because of the world wars and what we saw the consequences. You can look at it at a consequential standpoint. If you're a completely amoral corporatist psychopath, you can still see it's bad business. But Israel has been the only one that has continued to annex land directly against the Geneva Conventions, which, of course, they never signed because they didn't exist yet when they were made.
Well, China annexes land. China, well, not technically land, but they annex the South China Sea and the Spratly Islands, and they build artificial islands. Russia annexed Crimea. Russia annexed Abkhazia. Well, no,
Crimea was originally part of Russia.
Yeah, oh, yeah, sure.
They speak Russian, too. And they had a popular referendum with over 90% of the people decided to rejoin Russia because Ukraine is 15 billion euros in debt. And tried to outlaw the Russian language. So the population living there said that was the straw that broke the camel's back, the debt, the war, and the language. So they decided to rejoin Russia. It wasn't a conquest. That's an example
really
of
convenience. Well, but they didn't just hold a referendum, right? Wasn't it Russia who sent in their military forces and then a referendum was held? Or am I wrong about that?
You're wrong about that.
I'm pretty sure Russia invaded Crimea and then they held the referendum.
That was kind of the mass media thing. Russia has a base there anyway, and they put troops in their own base, but they're not patrolling the streets. No shots were fired. No one was killed, nothing like that. It's when they tried to outlaw the Russian language that Crimea was given to Ukraine by Khrushchev, who was from there because of Holodomor, because of all the people that the Russians had murdered leading up to World War II. But with
Crimea was independent. They were an autonomous republic, and then disputed, but they were annexed. And look, even if you don't agree with Crimea, then you could look at Abkhazia and South Ossetia and Georgia, and you could say, well, you know, historically these were a part of Russia, and I agree with you. Historically, Crimea was a part of Russia. Historically, Ukraine was a part of Russia. But the point being that, I mean, this happens all the time, and I don't find any moral problem with annexing territory. And you could say, well, we find that when you annex territory, when you conquer land, that's bad for business. And I agree with you. And that's why we have the Westphalian state system and we have national sovereignty right now. I agree with you. But I don't say that we honor national sovereignty because it's this sacred and moral thing, and to break it is a moral quandary. I say it's, like you said, because it's good for business. It's consequentially a good thing for nations to participate in. It's mutually beneficial. And so that all goes back to, you say, well,
for business. The reason it's bad for business is because it's immoral, because it turns out stealing stuff from people and murdering them pisses them off and causes revolt and problems. Like, you should be able to figure that out from a moral standpoint, which is how you understand what is good and bad business.
I think that a nation to execute the will of its people and to serve its national interest, I don't think there's anything immoral about that. I don't think there's anything, you know, you could say that, well, when China takes islands in the South China Sea, it's immoral because it's stealing from, I don't know, like the Philippines, because their EEZ expands out a certain number of nautical miles. You could say that's immoral. I think it is moral for the Chinese government, or it's moral for China's leaders, to protect its people, to protect the interests of its people. And maybe that supersedes the moral calculation of, well, you know, this is a bad thing. Maybe it's bad for the world order generally, but that's the only way to look at it, is consequentially what is bad versus, like, is it morally bad? I don't, the moral thing doesn't really, it's not, it doesn't enter into the equation for me.
Yeah, but it's not an A or B thing with China. It's not like, well, this is the only way they can be good for their people. You can lease land. You can buy things. You don't have to just take, or in China's case, create man-made islands and put things on them because you're aiming to annex territory in the long run. This is going to have bad consequences for China, and always has, but this is their policy. They want the Spratly Islands. They're pissing off Malaysia, Vietnam, the Philippines, Japan, Taiwan. It's not going to be good for the Chinese. It's good for specific corporations that are tied to oligarchs that want this business for personal interest, but it's not for the good of greater China whatsoever.
I think it remains,
it's
going to
have
to
long-term
seen.
Consequences.
I think it remains to be seen. I mean, you could just as you could very well say the same thing about the United States expanding. I think that's always the argument as well. You know, is this really good for the people of said regime, or is this the serving the interest of the elites? I think by and large, maybe not in the modern era with Western countries because they've been infiltrated and, you know, there's been subversion. But I think historically speaking, the interests of the aristocracy or of the leading or of the government, whatever you want to call it, has always overlapped with that of the people. And you could say now, well, is this going to have consequences? Sure, but I think it remains to be seen in the long term whether or not this will be a good move for China. Certainly being beholden to the United States economically, and the United States controlling the seas and being the global hegemon, I don't think that's in China's interest. You know, maybe you could say from your Western perspective, that's in their interest. I don't think you could speak for the Chinese and say that. And so that's all I mean to say, is that it's not necessarily immoral to conquer. Is it, you know, like you said, bad for business? Absolutely. Might it have bad consequences for the Chinese people? I think it could go either way. But to say it's immoral, it's wrong, and that's why we should have a problem with it.
But an individual can't do it, but a state can. Like, I can't just kick you out of your house and take your stuff, you know, but the government can.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, 100%. Because I think,
corporation.
Well, I think the state is a different entity than an individual. I think what you have is, what do they call this? The fallacy of composition, that something that can be said of a whole cannot be said about its parts. If you had that for individuals in a country, you would have anarchy. You know, it would be Hobbesian anarchy. But when you have it with the state, you have to look at foreign affairs as a mega Hobbesian anarchy. And I think that those kinds of moral judgments cannot be projected onto corporate entities. You know, if you come in and you say, I'm going to take your house, you stole from me. But if the state says, well, the army's going to come and take your land, well, I don't know. Who do you really blame for that? It's a much more complicated situation.
Well, they're going to take your land. They have to give you just compensation. That's why we buy and purchase property on an individual level. We can do the same thing with states. If China wants to buy the Spratly Islands or share them, then fine. But they're trying to butt out and bully all their neighbors, and it's already had backlash on them. They've lost a lot of business deals from the surrounding Indochina nations, and it's causing a lot of anti-China sentiment, which isn't just a regular Chinese person's fault, but that is being used by those factions here in Japan. I see a lot of that, where they're like, those fucking Chinese, look what they did in Spratly. They don't give a damn what they're doing in Spratly. They just hate the Chinese already, but now they have something to point to that they can actually make a case with.
Well, but the Chinese are not, I mean, to lease the islands or to lease the South China Sea would defeat the whole point. The point is to control the shipping routes. The point is to control the natural resources there. So to say, well, we could just do it in this Lockean way, this is why I call you a liberal, because you revert to this Lockean principle of, well, we could settle this through contract. We could settle this through compensation. We could settle this through exchange. And I think this is a little bit naive. I think this is a little bit blind to the reality of force. I mean, what if Malaysia or America, who controls the international waters and is kind of the enforcer of international law. International law is kind of a fiction. Unless you had America to enforce international law, it really wouldn't mean anything. But again, to say that, where was I even going with this? To say that, yeah, what if these countries don't want to give, or America doesn't want to give these islands? What if China can't lease these islands from international waters or from Malaysia or the Philippines, but they still want them? They still need them. They want them to increase their trading capacity so that they could become a regional hegemon. Well, they're going to have to take them. And they'll do that by building artificial islands, and so they can project naval power there. And I don't think there's anything immoral about that. I think the world is governed by very different principles than a nation. A nation can be governed by Lockean principles because the state can enforce law. In the world, you don't have Lockean principles because without the United States, and increasingly we have a multipolar world, you're not going to have anybody to enforce contracts or compensation. It just doesn't work like that.
But it's not a what if. It's we do control international waters, and you can lease the land because all the other countries are doing it besides China. I'm not opposed to war if it's a situation where, like Crazy Horse killing Custer, there was no negotiating with them. They'd been murdering Indians. They'd broken every treaty, and so the only thing left is kill the motherfucker. I get that. But that's not the situation as Spratly Islands. You can pull out a lot of what ifs and go, well, all those things, if America didn't exist and Malaysia and all them just weren't going to share the water and no cash incentive and none of that work, then you have force, sure. But that isn't the situation. We have wars of choice, and we use force because it makes a lot of money. War itself is a resource. Rather than stealing oil or gold or opium like in the past, as war got mechanized, just the pure machinery in it is, you're talking hundreds of billions of dollars. So they're actually actively seeking conflict because it's a cash cow for select industries whose interests do not overlap with the nation. They overlap with just themselves.
And well, so I'm not talking about America, though. I'm talking about China.
China's military-industrial complex works on the same model.
I don't think the Chinese government is seeking war with the United States. Is that what you're trying to say?
No, they're not seeking war with the, no, they're not seeking a hot war with the United States. They are looking at a cold war because it justifies their naval budgets to thumb their nose and rattle sabers at the United States. And the United States does the same thing. Neither one's going to go to war with each other, but they're going to use them as a pretext to feed the public to justify budgets for their armies.
I think this is a very libertarian way of looking things. And again, I don't say that as an epithet. I don't say that as a way to like delegitimize what you're trying to say. But I do think that nations can legitimately use force or take things to express the self-interest of their country. I think that's what generally happens. And you look at China and compare it to the military-industrial complex in the United States, it gets a much different picture. The same is true with Russia. I mean, these countries don't operate in the same way the United States does. I mean, you look at Xi Jinping, and it's almost, he's consolidating so much power, it's almost an autocracy in China. And so to say that, well, it's comparable when the United States saber rattles to when China tries to expand in the South China Sea, I just think that's just kind of a bogus comparison. I think that, and this all goes back to, China can take these lands. And we can disagree about whether this serves the military-industrial complex or whether this serves the interest of China. What I'm saying is that expressions of national interest, even if they involve force, and even if that force is sometimes excessive, at the end of the day, this is not a moral question. This is a question of pragmatism. And that's, you know, I think you like to get into the semantics. I think you like to get into the details, but, and we can disagree about, you know, who's really in charge.
Matter. I think the disconnect here is what you're assuming is national interest isn't national interest. It's something they purport to be national interest, but it's in their personal interest. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I'm saying even, well, and that's sort of the point though, even if it's not in the national interest, then it's a bad example. Let's say that they were doing this in the, for the sake of the national interest, or let's say they weren't. I'm saying that even if it is or if it isn't, I'm saying that if a nation is going to express its national interest, it doesn't matter if they use force. It doesn't really so much matter if that force is excessive. We could prefer that it not be excessive. We could prefer not to use force. But to say that it's immoral, I mean, that's the fundamental thing. You could say that in this one example, well, this is not a genuine expression of the national interest. I would say maybe that's debatable. But let's find a better example.
Yeah, some other example. Sure. Okay.
And like a hypothetical example, then I would say like America expanding out, doing Manifest Destiny, they conquer the West, they drive out the Native Americans. I think that's legitimate. And I don't really have I wouldn't have a problem with that from a moral basis.
They could have just built their railroads without slaughtering Indians. I mean, that's what led to our Civil War, was the race to the West, and you end up with over a million Americans being dead and putting ourselves many decades behind. Like, obviously gaining territory and resources is in the national interest, but I disagree that the only way of doing that is to wipe out a native population that was no threat whatsoever to the United States. They could have just worked with them.
I think they were. If you read anything about
the same way they did in Canada. I mean, they worked with native populations everywhere but the United States.
Well, in the United States, you could read about how the Comanche attacks in Texas, they would ride into town, scalp sure. people, they would do all kinds of horrible things, yeah, and maybe you didn't have to...
For nothing.
So, well, okay. Well, then you're going to get into the question of, well...
That's what I'm saying, when you attack...
But then people, that's consequentialist. But then that's consequentialist.
Yes, from a moral perspective and a business perspective. I'm giving you both.
But you're telling me, but that's the thing, you kind of flip-flop. You say, well, the reason that the Comanches are... First you say, well, they can live together. Well, I say, actually, they can't because the Comanches were killing the Americans. You say, well, they didn't do that
for no reason. They don't have a theological ideology where the Pope divides the new world that to people he's never met and just awards it to Portugal and Spain. Like, that kind of insane thing where you're not really a person unless you belong to my theological cult is what leads to violence.
And here we go to the religion obfuscation. Well, back to the point of...
war is historic. That's what's going on in the Middle East right now. You're like, oh, the Jews are mad at the Muslims. The Muslims are mad at the Jews. If they didn't have that theology, they wouldn't be at each other's throats.
It's an important subject, and I want to come back to it, but let's see what the crowd says before, and then we'll move to religion. Ken Mole says, Jeff, what is with your mustache? I shaved it. Grogster says, we need opinions on Trump withdrawal from Iron Deal. Go see my previous episode with Ryan. We laid it out. Glenn K says, hail victory. Zyklon Pearson says, glad that none of you are Zio shills. I don't get it. Personally, I see Jesus as the original National Socialist Jew. Token Evil says, it's reasonable to infer existence of greater civilization somewhere in the universe. Bronze Age audience relevance would have considered any such to be deity. God equals not realtor is less than a priori. Stein says, Ryan views on the development. No, I will not read this. Ryan, the Feder is already winning. Snapchat logic, cover up. European bones are found to be original bones in America. Hopi, Cherokee,
Man is 9,000 years old and was proven to be Native American. I know exactly what he's talking about.
All right. And he then claims that the DNA
of Indians... Natives have been there for 20,000 years, way older than those bones.
All right. And he completes with the DNA of Indians are European, Asian, Egyptian. J Page gives us $5. Thank you. Alfonso becomes a new sponsor of the channel. Thank you. Ace of Spades says Amerindians conquering one another for thousands of years. Culture. When it's someone with white skin doing the same, genocide. J Page says,
it's bad when anyone does it.
J Page says, war is the father of all things. Heraclitus. Tuffer says, I don't have anything intellectual or useful to add. Here's $2 because Ryan is awesome. J Page says, might makes right. I prefer might gives you rights, any rights. Benny says, Ryan, who started the Arab-Israeli wars?
Do you want me to answer that last question?
Maybe, yeah. if you have something to say.
The echo, there's my answer.
Uganda, not Wakanda, says...
I mean, it depends where you want to start it. If you want to say, if they say Arab-Israeli war, then you're saying after Israel exists already, well, Israel started that war.
Yeah.
But it's... way back, it's, you know, tit for tat, really.
Absolutely. Uganda says, ask Nick to justify the Rothschild loans to Vaticans.
I don't know anything about Rothschild's loans to Vatican. Sounds all like... Right. I like conspiracy.biz coming in for the...
The Vatican's not hurting for money. I don't think they need loans from the Rothschilds.
Glenn K says, the divergent evolutionary strategies of Jews and European Gentiles are likely the root of our repeated historical conflicts of interest. Ace of Spades says, the left is a tireless negative exception criticism of the native while fetishizing the outside foreign, ceaseless under undetermined to ruin. Tism says, my wife is Chinese, I am Polish, we live in America, we want America to be white again. Darius says, people like Fuentes and Richard with their white expansionist talk justify the reason whites are getting replaced and wiped out. No pity for me. Stop asking, says Jeff, I implore you to check out Brendan O'Connell's channel. I will. Grogster says, Nick, what about Aquinas, just war doctrine?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, Thomas Aquinas wrote about this, and I think it's basically Catholic theology that there is such a thing as a just war. I believe in just wars. And is that, do you just want me to answer that question, or are you going to read more
super chat? If you want to respond to the super chat.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the main disagreement here, to boil it down, is really, and to illustrate it, I think it goes down to, are you more of a Bismarckian or are you a Wilsonian? I call Ryan a liberal because I think he's a Wilsonian. I think he wants to put it into the 14 points and he wants to make it all clean and nice. And I'm a Bismarckian. I think that, and as he says, we forge the world through iron and blood. That's the how the future of Germany will be determined, or the future of Europe. And I think there's some overlap between how me and Spencer see those things, and he talked a little bit about that. This nationalism for all the nations kind of thing is a little bit hokey. That's why I call him a liberal. And I found that, you know, just thinking about it, I think that's a really good illustration. Do you think that you have to forge a nation and forge the interests of the people through a righteous war, through a holy war, or a just war? Or do you think that, you know, and I think Ryan believes in just wars, but I think he thinks that, you know, if there's excess, that's a big problem. And if it's through conquest, you know, that's not going to fly. That's not by the rules. They should just try and do it through currency. I don't really believe in all that stuff. I believe in history. I think it's real.
All right. And
yeah, you're supposed to learn from history, though. Sorry, you have more super chat.
No, but I'll read most of the super chat at the end. But we have one that says, Ox Stevens, $20 US. Thank you so much. He says, on the real, these guys are the most important minds on the internet right now. JF, well done. And Snapchat Logic says, Dawson is wrong. SmithsonianMag.com. And he quotes a link. All right. So people have the link and they can go read it. Now we came to the subject of religion quite fast.
The Dutch study from 2013 that tested the DNA of the Keswick man. See, I even knew what he was talking about without him being specific, and it's Native American bones.
All right. And Stein sends us five New Zealand dollars, and he says, Jeff, are you going to stream with Patrick Little? Well, guess what? Tomorrow, Patrick Little is coming on the show to talk with Halsey. Just Google his name and you'll see that this is going to be explosive. I don't think I can host this on my main channel. It's going to be explosive. Be there tomorrow. All right, so we converge very quick on the question of religion. And I think that the comments of Ryan are in line with a view of the Vatican as participating to some acts of colonialism, and by defining borders in the way they want over populations that existed there, may have contributed to the oppression of certain individuals that you find morally repugnant.
Yeah, not the current Vatican. The Vatican opposed the Iraq War, for example, but in history, that was their stance, and it didn't work out very well. It just led to centuries of warfare.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's really contestable, that division. I think the broader point that you're trying to make, which is kind of the typical atheist talking point, which is religion divides people, religion causes war. If only there wasn't religion, there would be no conflict. And I just almost think it's kind of silly. I mean, you think about what religion is, and it's not an arbitrary thing, you know, as though like a war for resources is something that matters, you know, or a war for self-defense is something that matters, but a war to decide the truth about what is existentially real, about who God is, what is the meaning of life. Well, that's a silly and ridiculous thing. Why would people go to war over their conception of what is morally just? I mean, I think that kind of highlights the main difference between materialists and people who believe in God, which is the materialists see God as restrictive or oppressive or divisive. And I think people believe in God say that the temporal world, there's no substance in it. There's really no content in it. There's nothing worth fighting for in the material world but what you believe in terms of God. You know, is there any more just cause than fighting for the supreme being of the world, if that's your belief, as opposed to fighting for, you know, an oil field or this or that? So I think that's just kind of
it's called not fighting and having peace.
Yeah, not going to happen. Part of being a Catholic is not being a utopian or a progressive. Man's tendency. Utopian,
but you can make a line and say we're not going to murder each other. I mean, most of the world hasn't had a war since World War II. It's only in these theocratic states plus the U.S., which is highly religious, that continues to chop each other up.
Man's tendency is towards war, and I don't think you're ever going to get beyond that. And you can say,
tendency is towards war. Monarchies and theocracies tend towards war, but it's not man's tendency.
Oh, but democracies don't. You're going to give me the democratic peace theory line that I think you'll find that liberalism, without its content, has brought war to its doorsteps. You don't see war right now. And you're right. But how long will this last? How long can this order last? I don't think in Europe it's going to last very long without war. You know,
we do have war right now. Who's at war right now? Because there's a lot of wars going on right now.
Well, you have all kinds of intrastate conflicts across the world, and you're going to soon have intrastate conflicts in Europe. And I think you'll have it in the United States and Canada as well.
And who doesn't have war right now?
Who doesn't have war? I think China, right?
Yeah, Japan, all the atheistic countries.
Oh, but again, I don't think that that's really the right way to judge about whether or not religion is valuable. Is that?
Oh, no, religion's valuable. I just don't think it's true. Like, I don't care what someone's religion is or isn't. But if their religion, because to me, religion is as religion does. There are plenty of peaceful Christians, Ron Paul types, that are Christian, but don't believe in genocide and war and might makes right. I mean, that's an extremity. They're not all Fuentes's.
I don't believe in genocide.
It's just natural. It's okay if the state has genocide. That's an exclusive pull for genocide.
Well, I think now you're trying to oversimplify it, but basically, yes. And you say that religion is divisive. Of course it's divisive. When Jesus Christ, it says in the gospel, that Jesus Christ said he came not to bring peace, but to bring a sword. Mm-hmm. And the point was that he was going to do something divisive. What's that?
Luke 12:47.
He came and he said that his truth would divide the world. He told he split up families, he split up nations. And I think that's I don't think that is a bad thing. I think that's, you know, if that's the truth, then it's worth it, right?
Well, if you think it's true, then you can live your life that way. I don't think it's true. I think a lot of the Bible is ridiculous. It's got animal sacrifice and talking donkeys and men with magic hair. And I just look at it as fables. It also has monarchy. I mean, that's the first chapter of Romans 13 is saying that, you know, the divine right of kings and things. We broke away with that. We made a republic. We got away from theocracy.
I think being a materialist is a silly and ridiculous thing. I mean, imagine thinking that this contingent universe exists, but for no reason. It doesn't have to exist, but it just does. I also think it's ridiculous that you're an atheist and you have a moral code. That to me is more absurd than a talking donkey. Somebody that doesn't believe in, well, really can't believe in objective morality, but yet will cast these moral judgments about genocide and this and that. I mean, what binds you to your moral code if you don't believe in the immaterial, if you don't believe in God?
Well, I don't think that the immaterial is part of objective reality. I think reality is the exact opposite of that. And I think that you're having a problem. If the only reason you behave or be good is because your invisible man laid out some rules, then you have an infantile sense of morals. You don't
the
have
sky a moral daddy compass. Argument.
You
it's
can
sky
have
daddy argument.
It is a sky daddy argument because you have a sky daddy that says don't murder, don't steal, but it's okay to have slaves. I mean, even in the Ten Commandments, they condone slavery in the sixth and the tenth. And the following chapter, Exodus 21:20, they're talking about beating your slaves with a rod. And it's okay if they get up and don't die because they're your property after all. You can't get that kind of disgusting level without some sort of authoritarianism. And this is a slave master relationship with that. When you worship your Jewish God, which was invented by slaves.
We're hitting all the notes now. We're hitting all the favorites. Well, let's dissect
the kind of authority they have. And it justifies slavery for 1800 years. And I find that morally repugnant. And I don't think that saying the universe is just cause is the only alternative either. And why can't somebody have a moral compass based on their own empathy and reasons?
Well, I'll tell you why. And, you know, we hit all the old favorites, which is Jewish God, Sky Daddy. I think there was one more in there. But to answer the fundamental question, why can an atheist not have a moral code? The reason is because without the immaterial, without soul, we are simply carbon. We are simply stardust. We're just neurons firing chemical reactions. And so what is morality? How can anyone have morality in dealing with what amounts to inanimate objects? I mean, we're animated, but I mean, we're not, if we're all just stardust, if all we are is deterministic chemical reactions, what difference does it make that on this blue marble floating around and God knows where somebody kills another person? Who cares? Why is that immoral? What tells you that that's immoral? I mean, we all have an intuitive feeling, which I think is evidence of God. We all have an intuitive feeling that there must be an objective morality, but without a God, without soul, without these kinds of things, there is simply no way to cast a moral judgment. I mean, you can say that, well, I don't agree with genocide or I don't like genocide, but who cares what your individual opinion is? There is no objective way of determining what is true. You know, if there is a moral law that is objectively true, what fits into that category and what goes against it? There's simply no authority to establish that, and it requires authority to establish.
You need an outside authority to tell you the difference between right and wrong. I'm not getting the connection here. Like, why is the belief that a ghost is animating my body or not determine any of my moral reasoning whatsoever?
Well, here's why.
In immaterial ether or not, why does it matter? And I also disagree with the idea, like, just stardust. What do you mean, just stuff? It turns out existence is a very wonderful thing. Mm. Maybe you think of it as all billiard balls. I don't.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because without a belief in authority, and this is another reason why you're a liberal, you don't believe in authority.
I do. No, an ultimate authority that can't be questioned that justifies things like slavery through 2000
Absolutely.
Years.
Well, that's a little anachronistic, but yes. Here's why. You can say, Ryan Dawson can say, I think genocide is wrong. And I can say, you know, I'm not saying this.
And you can justify it because you're a theocrat.
I can say, I think it's right. And who's to say who's right and who's wrong? Who has the authority to say who's right and who's wrong? You better hope that people like me are in this hypothetical scenario don't win out, that we don't, you know, we don't facilitate that on people
like you did win out, which is why we had all these genocides.
Well, and why? Who cares? We're all stardust. And to get to the point of the soul, if we're all just immaterial, I don't really understand what is the significance of an individual. What's the significance of anything?
If you're just going to die and go to heaven, what's it matter what happens on earth? You can have the same kind of silly play there.
No, you can't. In the Christian religion, it upholds the fundamental dignity and worth of every human being. Our coherent worldview says that we are the product of a divine author who created
every
us
human being?
And loves us eternally. Every human being.
So and your doctrine divides says, the world up and you murder 90 million American Indians and genocide's okay, even though they're human beings because
well,
they're
evil
not.
Happens. Well, evil, it's part of free will. That's why
so
evil
now
happens.
It is evil that the state did genocide.
Well, people killing people unjustly is evil. I think you can't say that a corporate entity is immoral for doing something, but I think if somebody is killed unjustly.
Is it evil for a state to murder millions of people?
I think it's a bad thing. I wouldn't say that the state
is evil.
Immoral.
You don't want to say it's evil?
Like I said, it's more complicated than that, but you want to play the gotcha thing because it comes down to this, that there is simply no answer for the question. There is nothing that binds you to your moral code in the absence of God. And you want to obfuscate it.
Yeah,
you want to get bogged down in the last
philosophy.
What binds you to your morality, Ryan? What binds you to your morality?
My philosophy, which doesn't require supernatural entities telling me what's
there
right and wrong.
But that's the problem.
It turns out that I can reason better than ancient Christians who owned slaves and things and murdered each other. Mm. That my moral compass is higher than that.
There you go. Well, but according to what standard? According to what standard?
A God, and then it's just
according to what standard? Your moral compass is higher according to what
standard? Your standard, you just said you think it's wrong to murder people, so you agree with me. You think slavery's wrong, I assume, or do you think slavery is a good thing?
No, of course not.
Okay, then you agree with me as well. But Christianity supported and practiced slavery for thousands of years.
Okay. But Ryan, I'm asking you though. You think these things are bad. You say you have a higher moral code than Christians. According to what standard?
of morals. I'm not appealing to outside authority. I'm appealing to your own reasoning. You agree with me.
No. But we're not talking about my reasoning. We're talking about you have a morality. You think this is bad and this is not. You yourself said, I have a higher moral code than ancient Christians because I'm atheist and religion is immoral. But
not
according
because I'm
to
atheist,
what
I can be religious
standard?
And still have a higher moral code.
Okay. Okay, but according to what
reasoning anyway.
According to what? Okay, so essentially you're saying my moral code is higher according to my own philosophy. Who cares about your philosophy?
That's
the
all
problem.
You're doing. You're saying I have a moral code based on my theology.
Except my theology says that our moral code comes from an extrinsic force, an extrinsic authority.
Your extrinsic force that is infallible and yet supported things like slavery, which you agree isn't right.
Well, I think things are different in their time, but that's another question. That's a fundamentally historical question.
At what point did slavery become wrong?
I think when Christ came, that was when the New Testament came around, and that's when the rules changed a little bit. But
Peter disagreed. He said slaves should obey their masters the same way their masters believe obey God.
Maybe a little bit after that.
Well, when?
Maybe a little bit after that.
Christians
I'm not a theological.
Have slaves and monarchies for over 1,000 years after Christ.
Well, but again, the only reason you find this repugnant, we have to go back. You can say, well, your religion said this, and I'm not a theological expert. I'm not an historical expert on it either. Mm-hmm. But the only reason that you say that these things are repugnant is because you seem to have a moral code. But nothing binds you to your moral code. And your moral code comes from within. And if your moral code comes from within, then you cannot say that this is objectively immoral. You cannot say in your worldview, if we say that genocide is wrong, that's only because it's our personal opinion, not because there's something objectively wrong about it. I could say that it's objectively right. I could say that murder is okay and rape is okay, and I could say all these things are okay. And all you could say is, I disagree with that, but our two judgments are equal because they're both subjective and personal. And so that's the great contradiction of the liberal atheist, such as yourself, where you have a very moralistic, you have a very moralistic worldview, but it's based on nothing. It's subjective. It's based on personal interpretation. And then that's why it's farce. It's complete farce. And so you say, well, talking donkeys are silly. At least talking donkeys are part of a coherent worldview. Your worldview is entirely incoherent.
It's not incoherent whatsoever. And truth, you can see objectively, things like science. If you're going to have a moral value like health, that's something that seems to be universal. Health is better than sickness, for example. And you have a practice like Christian witches burning off the last bit of umbilical cord from a baby's belly button because they think that's healthy. Well, they can think that, but it turns out it objectively isn't, because smoke going in the lungs does harm a lot of these babies and they do die. And the result is fewer children are healthy. So if you have a practice, regardless of what your belief, which results do not land you with health as where, say, an objective scientific, you know, soap, et cetera, is producing better results because it actually is true, then it's not cultural relativism. It's not just subjective. There is an objective reality that is discoverable that works. If you base aviation on science, you can get a plane to fly. If you want to base it on magic, you're probably going to crash. And it is good to say, if you're going to say, well, the world is round and build satellites and so on, based on that, based on objective reasoning, then it'll work. But if you're going to continue to say, well, my book says it's flat, so it has to be. You know, that is just an appeal to authority. And if your authority is wrong, your entire civilization will remain wrong until people rebel against it and break the word. Because it turns out a lot of what's written in the Quran, the Bible, or any other religious text doesn't come from a god. It came from people and they made mistakes.
Well, it's funny you bring up the flat earth thing, because actually, the medieval Christian scholars all knew that the world was round. That's a pretty popular myth. But, you know, it's funny you bring up the natural sciences to explain away morality. And I'll agree with you that you could say that objectively some things are better for the human body than others, you know, of course. And you could say that a day lasts 24 hours and this and that. But to say that something like murder is wrong, there is nothing in natural science that will tell you, and what even would be right and wrong? How could you deduce that from empirical natural science and establish a complex system of morality based on that?
You really don't think that people can have basic empathy and reason to determine that something's wrong. Just, I wouldn't want that to happen to me and my family. You can't reason that out. The only way you can the only reason that you can have any moral compass whatsoever is to come from baby Jesus or what have you.
The only, look at where
we have 120 million people living in Japan who don't have God, and it is a peaceful society.
See, this is the problem. I mean, and JF, I'm sure, is laughing because we had the same disagreement with Andy Worski, and he simply wasn't able to wrap his head around it. But there's all the difference in the world between saying, well, we can have empathy, and you can have empathy and say, I don't want somebody to be raped because I wouldn't want to be raped. But having empathy and saying, well, I have a rationalization for why I've made a personal moral judgment, that's all the difference in the world from saying we have an objective moral code, a universal moral code that we can abide by. There's all the difference in the world, because you can say, well, I don't think there should be rape because in terms of empathy, I wouldn't want to be raped. And I could say, empathy should not inform morals. I could say that morals should be decided based on the will to power. I could say that I read Nietzsche and my morality is the master morality. And so I'll dominate as much as I can. And that's what's moral to me. And you can say, I disagree. And that's as best as you can do. But to talk about morals in a universal sense is something.
Go ahead and keep talking. I got to get my door real fast.
All right.
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, you know, for the audience, it's something that logically can't be done.
Yeah, we are in the same discussion that we were with Andy, as you pointed out. Yes. That being said, yeah, your point is valid if we're talking about universal. Your point is not valid if you're denying morality at all. An individual can have morality. In fact, a robot could be programmed in such a way as to prefer some things. So there, I would say, we can have local moralities in the universe. Charles Thompson said, why is the atheist here the one who has a priority of transcendental justice while the Catholic is Machiavellian? Well, that's what we have to deal with when we talk with Nick, a Catholic Machiavellian. Killer Musk says, morality is a product of natural selection, as all human behavior is. It serves only one purpose, social cohesion. Outside of that, it is irrelevant. If you believe otherwise, you're not an atheist. Hawk Stevens says, Gnosticism is the way. Tim MK says, my wife is Chinese. Okay, this one I read before. And John Doe says, question for Dawson. Outside of legal fiat, how do you determine whether or not an individual or group own an area of land? Do you make a distinction between property and possession, or do you conflate them as most do? Did you hear the question, Ryan?
Yeah, I was kind of tacitly listening. They wanted to know the difference between property and possession.
Yeah, they want to know, outside of legal fiat, how would you determine if an individual or group owns an area of land, as is often the case if we're not talking about a kind of democratic society, if we're talking about nations versus nations, how do you determine ownership?
Well, if they're living on it and using it, you could say it was theirs. They don't have to have some piece of paper saying, well, I bought this from a court. Like, obviously, if they're already there and they're using it and farming on it and so on, that's their territory.
Absolutely. I think there's no objective reason for this to be true, but I agree that this is this is the common understanding of a sort of natural right. Someone was there, they existed, and we somehow have a basic respect for this usually. Which sends me back to the aspect of this discussion, which revolves around conquest. It seems to me, Nick, that in the way you process conquest, you are allowing individuals to get away with crimes as long as they do it in groups. And if they control a state to do the crime, basically they are absolved. Isn't it a way to remove moral guilt to people who should be held guilty for their action? If 5 people or 1 million people get together and decide to unjustly invade another nation, it's the same as if one person was to do it, isn't it?
Well, I think the difference is in terms of where do you assign responsibility. I think that's the difference. If you were to say, for example, about the Native Americans, if you were to say that America was immoral because of this, or if you were to say the government was immoral because of this, or it was immoral that this happened, I think that's kind of inadequate. So that's what I mean by that. You could say if a soldier on the battlefield was excessive in their treatment of an individual Native American, you know, let's say somebody, the American, while they were raising a village or something, you could say that person was immoral. You could say that person did an immoral act. But the problem is that only, and this goes back to, I guess, my libertarian background, Mises talked about this, only individuals can act. And if only individuals can act, only individuals can be assigned moral responsibility. So you could say that, you know, if it was an unjust war, for example, you know, if it was a brutal war, it was unnecessarily violent or unnecessarily aggressive or ambitious, you could say that the ruler that made that decision was immoral in governing so. Or you could say that an administrator who carried it out this way was immoral. My problem is you cannot assign moral responsibility to a corporate entity. That's what I meant by that. Not saying like, well, if you just get in a group, then, you know, you could do whatever you want. But simply that you can't hold an institution morally responsible.
All right. And we have...
I think Custer's Corral, where they're taking 9-year-old Indians and putting them on stages and stripping them of their clothes and selling them to gangs of cowboys to be raped to death, was immoral.
There you go. Agreed.
Yeah. All right. That was the state doing it.
Ace of Spades.
Back where we started.
Science. Less of them means more resources for you and yours. Try again with science equals... morality. Bill Raffi says, does Ryan believe, I will not read the rest of the question for YouTube censorship purposes. Kurt F. says, reason is incapable of making moral assertions. At best, all you can do is derive moral rules from moral axioms. There's no innate morality beyond irrational belief, parenthesis, faith. Also, Messiahs, Keck. Aiden says, the new atheist philosophy of Dawkins, Harris, etc. is per sophistry. Intelligent atheists like JF acknowledge objective morality needs a god. Just to be clear on that though, needs a god, I would say simply that a god provides an objective grounding for morality, but it could be something else. J. Padge Dak says, Christianity is a religion following carrot and stick. It is thus tailored to slaves. This is enough to reject it. Iridima says, it's bizarre formulation that atheist Europe has low murder rates than South American Christians. Are the South Americans just more sinful? Kurt F. says, South Americans, I will not read this one. Archie says, Nick, read some contemporary secular moral philosophers such as Parfit, Humer, Korsgaard. You'd learn a lot about moral objectivity. All right, guys, mm-hmm. So we touched upon our two main themes. Was there anything else that wasn't said or any other branch that you wanted to explore in this discussion?
I want to add, I also agree, you should probably read some David Hume and Soren Kierkegaard.
David Hume, imagine. No, well, look, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I guess this is the one thing I will say. You know, you can point to Japan and you could point to Western Europe. And this is the broader thing. You know, I was on Twitter the other day and I saw some study that said in America, more people are depressed than ever across all groups, ages, races, genders, everybody's more depressed. And I think that you look at a society or a civilization right now, we live in a society, a civilization right now that is anemic, that is doing very badly. And I 100% attribute this to the loss of religion. Without an adequate explanation for existence, for suffering, for death, in the absence of all of this, despite material abundance in food, in healthcare, in well-being, in leisure, peace, you know, we have low crime rates, we have low murder rates. I basically live in like a materialist utopia where I am right now. And I live in Chicago, but I live in the suburbs, so it's a little different, a little different. And I will say that despite the fact that we've never been better off in all the ways that Ryan Dawson says are moral, which is according to natural science, according to material benefit, we've never been better off, and yet we've never been more miserable. We've never been closer to the brink of disaster and demise, and everybody knows it, and everybody feels it. And that dissonance is what brought me to God. It wasn't like, you know, I read the Bible and I was really inspired. I mean, don't get me wrong, I did read the Bible and I did get inspired. But what got me interested, what brought me to the embrace of the inevitable and I think intuitive conclusion that God exists and religion is important, is the fact that these material appetites they will never be satisfied. And even if they are, it'll never be an adequate substitute for communion with our Holy Father, with somebody, with the author of the world. And so that's really what brought me to it, that a priori reasoning, which I just think is lacking. I think there's a tremendous hubris in looking at the history of mankind, which is religious, and looking at all these texts and the scholarship and saying, well, we simply know better. We're simply just a little bit smarter than they were. We don't believe in that kind of shit. You know, we can figure it out for ourselves. I think there's a tremendous hubris in that. And so I guess that's you know, the big thing, aside from the details. That's the big thing that brought me over.
All right. So thanks to you two for this awesome discussion. There's lots of enthusiast fans in the chat who are saying, Nick BTFO, Ryan BTFO. But in reality, it was just a very fine discussion. I really appreciate it. And thanks to you. No. I mean,
I thought you were going to respond.
I was actually waiting and you weren't speaking. Listening. Go ahead.
No, I was just waiting. Okay. I'm very patient. I live in Asia. They have a lot of patience. I think that came from fisherman DNA. They have to sit there for a long time. I don't know. I think you might want to look into cosmotheism as well, where this idea, I used to talk to William Pierce, believe it or not, we were buddies. He was a rocket scientist, and he was also a total white nationalist and all that, and we would argue and everything, but his cosmotheism might be something interesting for the Super Chat folks, because his view, he's atheistic in a way, but also not, because he's a pantheist. So what he thought is, rather than an immaterial God, he had an impersonal material God, and that the universe and its purpose was evolution, and that essentially consciousness was a long process of the universe looking at itself, and that you can think of the Earth, this is sort of a Native American belief too, Mother Earth, as a giant cell. It's a people-making thing. And that people and folk and races evolve higher and higher. And to him, his race is his purpose, because to get to godhood, we have to evolve further and further to a hyper consciousness. And he's right now we're at a stage of consciousness as individuals, but that could advance over time. And so that the utmost importance was preserving his race and people and furthering the genes, so we become more and more intelligent and further the universe's ends. And that was, I thought, an interesting, a different religion. I think he basically did it for tax evasion purposes, but it is something that people might get behind. But yeah, I'm an anti-slavery, anti-genocide, and I think you can have perfectly good moral reasoning based on your brain, the same way you do every other decision in your life.
Religions are not objective, they're subjective. That's why we have so many of them. That's why we have so many sects within the same religion, and why you have so many individual interpretations within the sects. It all comes down to your subjective interpretation of what you're claiming a God says, a God that may not even exist, or that gods say, because some religions like Hinduism are polytheistic still. Or it's not a god, it can just be some very esteemed philosopher, as like in Buddhism and so on. So it is always subjective. All you ever have are your empathy and reasoning, and that is what we try to hash out. Whatever your values are, the philosophy of empiricism and science will get you there. If your goal is health, and you base your knowledge of the human body on assuming that the material world is material and it is according to physical laws which are discoverable, and that through experimentation, the scientific method, that you can have progress in this knowledge, then yes, you know, soap works, shampoo is good, wearing shoes, all these things that science provides us, whatever your goal is morally, or whatever your value system is, whether it's to live a long time, to be healthy, to strive for happiness, your forms of medicine, entertainment, etc., are best sought out through the path of science and an empirical material world, and basing reality on that which it actually matches, because most likely science is actually true. Appealing to this phenomenon of magic and infallibility for your moral code is how you end up with systems that support slavery for thousands of years and rigidly oppose progress in what we currently consider moral development. Burning people accused of being witches, stopping stem cell research, and so on are products of religious bigotry. And Nick holds the same ideology. If he was born a Muslim, he would be an ISIS member. And if he was Jewish, he would be a Zionist. He's okay with state-ordained genocide. Genocide's always by the state, so that's the same as just being pro-genocide. I don't think that's a moral position. I don't think that's a typical modern-day Catholic position either. And to say that you can't have morals without your specific God is ridiculous. Just look around the world. Who's fighting? Who isn't? Anybody can have morals, and there are plenty of secular moral philosophies, which I implore you to go read and study. And there are other religious philosophies. It doesn't matter what you derive it from, but morality ultimately comes down to your own empathy, sympathy, and reasoning. And you can attribute that to exterior beings, imaginary or otherwise. It doesn't matter. It's all up to your own brain.
All right. Well, thanks to you both for coming. It was really awesome to hear you guys on religion and on international affairs. And have a great day, both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Jeff, Nick, see you later.
Yep. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right. That was pretty fun. I think that they are very subtle thinkers, so it's very hard to take a position. I will read some of the super chats that I skipped because I wanted to ask the questions that were relevant for the moments of the debate, but I've skipped this. Some Stein says, views on the development of, I will not read this one. JPAC, $5 Australian, thank you so much. This one I read. Going through those that I read. People like Darius says, people like Frentes and Richard with their white expansionist talk justify the reason whites are getting replaced and wiped out. No pity for me. I read this one. And Stop Asking for My Name said, Israel's Talpiot project is a serious threat to the world's critical infrastructure. I will read about it as you proposed. Zyklon B says, K for RD. How far does Zionist influence go? Oh, that's a question we might have for him the next time. Uganda, not Wakanda, says, JF googled the Lavon affair. This one I read. And Benny says, Free Tibet, Northern Cyprus, and Constantinople. Ark Steven, I read this one. Aydan says, logical conclusion of Ryan's thinking is NCAPism. I'm not sure logical conclusion. I think that he is about liberty and he is a form of libertarianism. I'm not sure it logically concludes into libertarianism. J-Page, Germany rejected Western Enlightenment ideas. I'll take Goethe over Locke or Hobbes, Anglo/French, any day. Ace of Spades says, when you're better at the game of war and conquest, you're bad. When you try the same with sticks and sharp rocks, you lose. Then you're a victim. Ace of Spades says, Indians would intentionally target settlers, disembowel women, hang her entrails around her neck, and leave her to perish. All right. Godzilla says, if whites didn't conquer the Americas, the Chinese would have soon after. How do you think that would go down, Ryan? Well, that's a very interesting alternative historical scenario. Maybe Mr. Z would have an opinion on this. It would be spectacular to think of what it would mean to have a Chinese empire or Japanese empire spreading through all of North America. That would be a significant change to the world's development. Phil's Lab says, great show, JF, good riddance, low IQ, Warski. Oh, and by the way, for those of you who want to support the show, and tomorrow we have Halsey versus Patrick Little. Patrick Little is a Senate candidate in California, and he seems like a funny guy. I can't wait to see him against Halsey. He seems pretty based. The other day he was photographed as he was exiting the Republican Congress or of some sort, and he stepped over an Israeli flag. I think that he looks very good on camera. He has some nice sunglasses, and I don't know what's going to happen with him and Halsey in the same stream. It's going to be quite explosive. And for those of you who want to support the show, go check the new Patreon page. I just put the link in the description. It's patreon.com/thepublicspace. We've just opened it. If we can raise $100 or a few hundred dollars, I'll be able to buy a new camera and microphone for Lauren. I would want to have a good voice from Lauren. I think it's going to improve the show greatly. All right, the crypto report says it was Anglo-Protestants killing the Comanche in Texas, not Spanish Catholics. Dawson is attacking a strawman. And Baron S. Thompson says, you should reach out to Dave Smith from the podcast Part of the Problem. I think you would make a good opponent for Nick. Yeah, I think that Nick is not a specialist of arguing for God. There are people like Jay Dyer who are better at this, and I think Nick recognizes this. Nick is just loosely able to make a case for God. He understands the argument broadly. However, he's not as radical as someone as Jay Dyer in terms of being a fan of logic and universal truth. So of course to me this debate was not interesting because Nick is the best defender of religion. It was because these two personalities, they have broad interest. Both Ryan and Nick, they are able to comment on anything in history. You saw it, the way they were just dropping knowledge on history. This is not like we planned this on a Google Doc. These guys are too encyclopedia. Killer Moss, morality is a product. Okay, this one I read. Ace of Spades says, communism between number one and number two, body count by ideology. After Islam, number two, global motivator of terrorism. No religion. All right. John Doe says, okay, this one I ask your question to Ryan. Ace of Spades says, if your feelings create morality, my feelings can cancel morality. See how that shit works. Yeah, that's where Nick comes in and says we need an objective ground. I would say we don't necessarily need an objective ground to guide moral principles. We could have an agreed upon intersubjective truth. Just like we agree upon things that are commonly observed. We agree that certain colors are what they are. We agree that certain lights are more powerful than other lights. We agree on things, and we agree on systems to communicate these things. And in the same way, we agree on language. In a given local society, people talk the same language. We could talk the same moral language. We could have an intersubjective agreement on morality. Uganda Not Wakanda says, Nick is contradicting himself. He's a Catholic cock who believes in Pontifex Maximus. His standard isn't God, it's Muslim feet kisser Pope Francis. I think that Nick has many times recognized this, not in this debate though, but many times Nick has said, no, he believes in what the church says as guiding morality in events where God has, where he doesn't have a statement by God himself. Ospin says, we're reaching moral fagging levels that shouldn't be possible. Philip S. says, God's compass equals genocide is A-OK. Token Evil Globalist says, slavery gives humans objective value. Stein says, big fan of Ryan Dawson now. Nothing better than watching Catholics getting made to look silly. Still love Nick, even though he thinks I'm going to hell. Ace of Spades says, science. This one I read. Kurt F. says, reason is incapable of making moral assertions. At best, all you can do is derive moral rules from moral axioms. There's no innate morality beyond irrational belief. Also, Messiah's cake. This one I had read. All right. Oops, I have a shift in my super chats. Iridima says, it's bizarre formulation that atheist Europe has lower murder rates than South American Christians. Are the South American just more sinful? Archie says, Nick, oh, this one I read to Nick. Metal says, Nick, do I have to share heaven? I will not read this one. Vegard says, we live in a society. We live in a society. In a world. Where everything was up for grabs. One man. Mark Nanman, $5 US, says, St. Peter said the Jewish nation is corporately guilty of the death of Christ in Acts 2 on Pentecost. Individual Jews can be forgiven through baptism. Hawk Stevens, $50 US, thank you so much. This is the best thing on the internet. Please make this happen again. Well, guess what? It's happening tomorrow. A debate that... tomorrow I had scheduled an episode alone with Halsey. And it's going to be fun because we're going to have a parts alone before Patrick Little comes in. It's going to be fun. But when Patrick Little comes in, it's going to be something else than fun. True Diltum. I saw your YouTube channel, True Diltum. That was awesome. He does great work. Please get me on your stream. I have 16k subs. I'm desperate. Don't be desperate at 16k. You're just halfway through the Papa JF phase. And we should have True Diltum. I didn't even read his super chat, and I watched his videos today. It was pretty awesome. Let's have True Diltum on. Now I need his Twitter. I'm sure I can find his Twitter. Rawhide says, get True Diltum on to discuss Hans Hermann Hoppe. We had so many super chats on Hoppe. We're going to do a special episode on Hoppe. I'm also talking to Richard Spencer. I think that there is some amazing thinking going on in his head, and I want to pull it out before he even starts talking about it or think about it. I want to have a discussion one-on-one with Richard Spencer on something very important, which I think Richard Spencer, what he did recently is he has reacted on Twitter to a video made about him, and the video was asking in the interrogative form, is Richard Spencer abandoning the alt-right? And that was following the debate, well, the discussion of Richard Spencer and Nick Fuentes right here on this channel. And the answer of Richard Spencer was, no, I'm not abandoning the alt-right, but the video that I quote here is right. I am, in fact, thinking more and more about the nature of power. And I think that we have a lack of understanding of power dynamics in the alt-right. So I want to bring Richard Spencer on right here. And we're going to dig his brain on this thinking that he's been doing around power and how to influence it, how to gain it, and how to control it. Frank Underwood, 100 NAC, thank you so much. God or no God, existence is a war for dominance and making babies. Yeah, people who are not willing to use violence against others are in the end an evolutionary dead end. Colin Kelly, $10, says camera fund, thank you. Vlad Hogan, $5, says, Ryan, what is your source for cowboys auctioning off native children? I might ask him on Twitter, and maybe I'll put it in the description. Problematic Bob, he says, God, big if true. True Diltum says, did RS abandon the alt-right? Was my video. Oh yeah, so that's where I ended up on the True Diltum channel. It's like, oh, there's a guy that asked, is Richard Spencer abandoning the alt-right? So True Diltum, subscribe to his channel. It was an awesome video, and Richard Spencer said, absolutely, this video is right. It describes my current thinking. And True Diltum has seen right through Richard this time. All right, guys, I think it's going to be the end. I thank you so much. There's already 6 patrons that have subscribed in the last hour, on top of the sponsors of the YouTube channel, and of course, you guys on the Super Chat, who keep funding this amazing adventure. I will be trying tomorrow. I essentially fall into the phase of a full-time YouTube career. So you guys have given so much money to this channel that I think I can live off of that while I develop this channel further. And I thank you all for doing that and for allowing me to do this. I'm gonna stream every day until I'm tired and I fall on a bed.